We're back with more of a special Project Milwaukee State of Upheaval edition of Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North, and it's great to have you with us. As we all know by now, Governor Walker controversially stripped state public employee unions of their collective bargaining rights, setting off a firestorm of protest and counter-protest. So it's hard to make the argument that unions came out a winner in the political contests of the past year. But the Milwaukee Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO's Sheila Cochran, says don't count out unions just yet. She says the year has made them more determined than ever to fight for the rights of working people, both public and private. Cochran tells Lake Effect's Stephanie Lecce that it's important not to understate, however, just what was lost.
Obviously, we lost something extraordinarily dear to us in collective bargaining, and a lot of the unfortunate legislation and very bad public policy that's come out of that fight. But I think that we won in the fact that there's been an extraordinary sense of solidarity in the state and across the nation, and we've benefited from that. Our members are very attuned to all of the things that are going on, which is a plus. And obviously, there's been some loss in workplace safety, loss in jobs and loss and wages and all the benefits that a lot of people enjoyed. And that's unfortunate. But it also, I think, has given us a truer sense of what we actually had that we need to continue to fight for.
Why was this fight for collective bargaining rights for public unions so important for unions in general, including those in the private sector?
I think the perfect illustration of that is what's going on right now in Manitowoc Crane. It's a machinist shop primarily. It's a company that has extraordinary good benefits and jobs. And there on the negotiating table is this right that we hold dear, the right to join unions freely, that has not been questioned in the private sector when, there's been a union shop in place. And that is the issue on the bargaining table. And those workers are taking the fight on, hopefully for us, in the private sector. They are on strike in Manitowoc. We are in full support of them. And I was in a meeting this past week where, to a person, everyone was saying, this is our fight, much like the fight in Madison was our fight.
Governor Walker said that his taking away of collective bargaining rights wasn't necessarily an anti-union move, but it was necessary to provide the state with tools to tackle the state's structural deficit. Was this not a legitimate response to a state in fiscal crisis?
Governor Walker lied. We've had Republican governors before who've never done that. Governor Walker just simply lied. He knows he lied. We all know he lied. He lied because we are that organization that is very clear in how we approach politics with our own union members. They told us in as much why they did it. It had nothing to do with the state's deficit. It had nothing to do with money. It was all about power. And he found the ultimate way to take it away, and we intend to fight back for it.
You don't feel that this was a chance for the state to really address the structural deficit in, in addressing one of the biggest costs, which would be pensions, health care among public workers?
Public employees over the course of many years have given back through negotiations, and they had been promised certain things by giving up on the front end wages and other benefits in order to put it away in their pensions. People understand now that pensions had been fully, at least in the state of Wisconsin, they were viable and good. Structural deficits are just that. Every department determines what it needs. I can guarantee you, in any department in state government, you can go through and find all kinds of ways where things that might be a little bit harder to deal with might be of better benefit for the state. But those aren't the things that they tackle. They always go after what a lot of people would like to say is low-hanging fruit. Go after the employees. And in this instance, go after those employees who have a bargaining representative. Well, they did. And I can guarantee you that we've seen absolutely nothing that is going to make the state more viable. We're losing jobs in this state. We are not as attractive as the governor would like to say that we are to outer states like Illinois. Illinois is growing faster in its employment than we are. We're bleeding jobs all over the state. He has now backed off of his promise of 250,000 jobs. There's a reason for that. Most employers want a climate that they can work in that's peaceful. This state is currently at war. Its workforce is at war with its administrations, some of them private sector administrations, but most certainly our public sector administration. And so when the government turns on itself, you've just turned on your very workforce. Where is that going to give you any peaceful nature in the state to proceed with any kind of good jobs?
What about the examples of school districts around the state that have been able to make use of these tools that Governor Walker has created by getting rid of collective bargaining, where we really haven't seen class sizes increase all that much, but the school districts have been able to, some might say, become more efficient by renegotiating contracts that otherwise they wouldn't have been able to with collective bargaining?
I think that those school districts are probably small. They most certainly aren't the district that I sit in the hub of, not Milwaukee, and they aren't some of the other districts. It is always easy to find a few small examples of something that you want to do egregious that will, in fact, reinforce your argument. But no one's being very specific in those editorial comments and commercials that we've been seeing over time in the state recently. So we're not very clear on which districts or where they were before. You talked about structural deficits. Maybe some of those school districts weren't in as big a panic as before. I know all over this state for many years, school districts have been working with other groups to talk about funding and the funding formula. And, you know, when we've had opportunities to fix those things, one of the more difficult things to do, again, is the funding formula, how we fund public education. No one wants to really tackle the hard stuff. So you go after the agreement and you say, OK, fine, get rid of it. And then you attack teachers. I mean, when did teachers get to be the enemy? And when did our children get to be the ping pong balls of politics? So where he can experiment all over the state with either collective bargaining and not having collective bargaining or finding a few districts that can come forward and say, oh, we've done great and wonderful things. I guarantee you they do not match the dollar for dollar loss in education in the technical college system, in the public school system, or in DPI overall. They don't match it, and they will never recover that. We have gone so far backward in this state. It is deplorable. It will take us years to recover from this.
Why, as you described before, were unions in this vulnerable position where they became low-hanging fruit?
Because of the continual rhetoric, especially within the public sector around taxes. You can ask anyone if they want their taxes lowered, and they'll say, of course I do. But then you ask them what service they want to give up, and they can't really articulate what those services would be because they take those services for granted. If your home is on fire, there was a case recently I know of either last year or the year before where some poor woman down south, her house burned down because she didn't have the wherewithal or didn't choose to pay for the private sector fire department. We see it at a national level with the attack on the Postal Service and postal workers in the silliness that Congress passed around their pensions so that we lose Saturday deliveries and we begin to then lose services. And, oh, yeah, by the way, let's privatize the postal services. There's all of this. So somewhere, someone has got to start to think about as a whole how this stuff is happening and what's happening to us, because it's not going to get any better.
How do you respond to claims that organized labor has influenced the conversation here in Wisconsin by people who aren't even from Wisconsin, bringing in protesters, you know, that it's outside money that's funding the recall drives, things like that?
Oh, this fight extends so far beyond Wisconsin. You know, we are, and I've said this over and over again when asked that question, we are international unions. My local union had a number. It was 438. It meant we were the 438th union organized by the UAW. We identify ourselves by numbers because we believe in equity. And we identify ourselves by numbers because that's the way we were organized. But I can guarantee you, that if Local 438 got in trouble, Local 469 was going to come to help. Local 1866 was going to come to help. Local 6000 was going to come to help. It is why we're organized in the way we are. Most certainly we're going to call on our friends. I am not the least bit ashamed of that. And they came by the droves. And they continue to come because they understand it's not just our fight. You know, the conservative element always likes to criticize how much we pay in union dues. Well, I'm very proud to tell you that as a dues-paying member of the UAW, still a dues-paying member of the UAW, my dues are an investment in my protections. They are an investment in the framework of the organizations that we believe in. It is no more than the investment that the business community pays in when they pay their dues to the MMAC, the GMC, the WMC, the United States Chamber. No one talks about their dues. I'm proud to talk about mine. I know exactly where they go. I know what they go for. And I know that we understand that. And it's high time that the rest of the community understands that unlike other organizations, our dues go back to protect us. So when people criticize those people for coming in to help us, you better believe they better come and help me. That is what I've been paying union dues for. So be it my international president, a servicing rep, or my brother or sister from either border that wants to cross over in this state, if they want to help us in this fight, I will open my doors to them. And we have, and we intend to continue to do so.
What does the future of Wisconsin look like with public unions having been stripped of collective bargaining rights, but this sense of solidarity among unions increasing?
You know, sometimes I remember an older gentleman I used to work with. He was telling me we were having an organizing class once, and he said, you know, I don't know why we're doing this. He said, because unions will never be what they were back in the 30s. Well, the governor kind of threw us back to the 30s. And I think that the more that this workforce, especially in this type of recession, looks at what is happening to organized labor, the more they understand, and the more they understand that fight, which is why I think we have such a volatile movement of people around us. I think that we can become stronger. Lord knows there are enough of us around who remember the day when, and there are the rest of us who are trying to organize more now, where this becomes, I think, a way to catapult us into a stronger group. I'm not certain. Obviously, I don't have a crystal ball and where those numbers look and what it looks like. But I can tell you one thing. There are an awful lot of union members who, as we would like to say, have come home because they have seen what it's at like when you don't pay attention to the political future.
Well, Sheila Cochran, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me, Stephanie.
Sheila Cochran is the Chief Operating Officer and Secretary Treasurer of the Milwaukee Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. She spoke with Stephanie Lecce. You can hear more of their conversation as supplemental audio at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And that is all the time we have today. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you can be with us again tomorrow morning at 10 for day 3 of Project Milwaukee State of Upheaval. You can listen to all of our Project Milwaukee segments, plus the WUWM newsroom reports, all on WUWM.com. You're listening to WUWM FM and HD1, Milwaukee Public Radio. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is coming up next.